Welcome in to the Locked On Knicks podcast. Gavin Shaw, Alex Wolf. Today we are diving deep on Obi Toppin's past with a guest that knows a lot about it.
Yeah, we have Ricardo Greer of the Dayton Flyers program here with us to talk all things Obi Toppin. He is the associate head coach, was there during Obi's time. So we talk about what it was like coaching Obi, what he thinks about Obi's game now, favorite personal anecdotes, all kinds of great stuff coming up next on Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I think we see Willis coming out. There he comes right now.
Starts without a five. Ewing for the win. Yes!
Up, up left. Now fires it.
He's good. And he's fouled.
Anthony for three.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast. And we want to thank you, as always, for making Locked On Knicks your first listen today and every day. We are now available on all platforms, and that includes, you guessed it, frequent listeners on YouTube. This is one you want to go on YouTube to see. It's pretty cool. You get all the sights. You get a celebrity in Dayton world in Ricardo Greer, and you get the two of us. But who are we? I'm Gavin Shaw, a play-by-play broadcaster. He is Alex Wolf, editor-in-chief of the Strickland, the Greatest Knicks website out there. And Alex, this is a pretty cool opportunity. Couple of thank yous before we get into it. Big shout out to Doug Housechild, the Dayton SID, who I cold emailed, and he was nice enough to stick with me, find the right person for it, set this up. So big shouts to Doug. And then friends of the pod, Benji Ritholtz and our guy Prez, for suggesting a couple of fantastic questions. Benji had the one, I won't spoil anything, but just trust, they had two really good questions in here, and our guest is really, really exciting. It is a Ricardo Greer, who had a pretty amazing career as a player, played at the University of Pittsburgh, had a ridiculously good career there in the late 90s, and then was both a French League MVP, and now is a French League Hall of Famer before getting into coaching. He started at Dayton a month before Obi Toppin committed to the school, and has been there 5 years, is now the associate head coach. And as we found out at the end of the podcast, Alex is a New York Knicks fan, a New York City native. So he's certainly passionate. He's certainly been keeping track of Obi. I won't delay any longer. Let's get into it right now with Dayton associate head coach, Ricardo Greer. All right, guys, as promised, we are lucky enough to be joined by Coach Ricardo Greer, the associate head coach at the Dayton men's basketball program. Ricardo did some research too, former French League MVP, French League Hall of Famer as well. Quite the resume, but we're here to talk about our guy, Obi Toppin, today. And I'm interested to get your perspective on this, because I feel like you and Obi are kind of linked, because unless I'm off here, you guys came into the program just a month apart. When you came in and then Obi committed a month later, obviously, like, you probably didn't get a lot of time to know him as a recruit, but what was sort of the initial reaction of the other coaches? Did they think like, wow, we really got something here? Like, or this guy could be a nice piece down the road? Were people excited when he joined the program?
Yeah. So, you know, first and foremost, thank you for having me on the show. I'm really excited about this. Yeah. When we first got Obi here, he came on an official visit. You know, he was relatively unknown. Nobody really knew about Obi. And, you know, he played with some of the guys on the team, and we were watching him move up and down the floor, his athleticism. And we were like, you know, we might have something special here, but it's going to take time to get him developed and get him right. But, you know, we were really excited that we had Obi on our team.
What were sort of the first impressions you had of Obi when he first got in, like, both as a person and as a player? I think that one thing that we've really gravitated towards as Knicks fans with Obi on the Knicks is just like, he just seems like such a nice dude, you know, like everything, like he's a family man, you know, even though he's a third year NBA player, he has like a kid, and he seems like he's sort of like one of the veteran leaders already, which probably has to do with the fact that he's a little older than his contemporaries, you know, on the team. So has the the benefit of being a late bloomer for still adding to his skill set, which we'll get to in a bit, but also the, you know, also is the benefit of being older and, you know, more wise, I guess. But also just on the court, it seems like he really busts his butt all the time and is always trying to get better. So like, what was it like those first, I don't know, couple months into his tenure with Dayton, as far as how he was received there on the team?
Yeah, Obi, from the first day that he got on campus, you know, from picking him up at the airport to the first day he got to meet his academic advisor, his future teammates, you know, coaching staff. He was a ray of sunshine, man. Always had a smile on his face, always joking, always laughing. You know, it was hard to see that Obi was having a bad day because he was always had a smile on his face and he always made everybody else feel comfortable and happy around him, you know. And then, you know, as far as his work ethic, Obi worked, man. Obi was the first one in, first one out. You know, Obi came to us, I think he was around 176, 180 pounds, and his body transformed to almost 220. So, you know, you could just see that he just continued to get better every day. And he never changed the person that he was, you know, even to this day. You know, he's a lottery pick playing for the New York Knicks. Obi's the same guy, you know, so it's great to see that. And that's one of the great things about him is that he never changes the person he is because he's just a great human being.
Was there a moment, Ricardo, during that redshirt freshman season where you guys kind of like your eyes popped open? You were like, oh, we might really have something here. Like I don't know about like national player of the year type guy, but like this guy was an absolute steal for someone who essentially wasn't recruited coming out of high school, went to prep school for a year, got some offers, but I don't think necessarily had that hype going in.
Yeah, I remember in the beginning when he first started practicing and working out with the guys, you know, he was smaller, you know, he wasn't as physical as the other guys, and guys were basically, you know, doing what they wanted. And then a couple months in, one practice, he makes some moves and dunks it. And we were like, where did that come from? You know, and then all of a sudden it was just every day. It was constant every day, every day. And then we just kept telling ourselves, like, man, when he comes online the following year, he's going to be a problem. You know, I think we got one here. So it was great to see his progress, but that just didn't happen. The kid was in the gym every day. He was in the weight room nonstop, getting his body right, changed the way that he ate. And you can see the results.
What do you think the thing was that he most had to work on when he got to campus? Like you mentioned a couple times that he came in, you know, and needed to put muscle on, needed to put weight on. I think that the results speak for themselves there. I mean, he got, by the time that he was winning National Player of the Year, he was absolutely enormous. He looked huge compared to everybody else. But you know, were there other skills that you guys looked at initially and said, was it like the shooting or, you know, getting the ball in his hands more or what? Like, was there something that you guys looked at right away and said, okay, I think we've got to address this, you know, and really make sure that he gets this right, because then we can unlock this potential that he has in him?
Yeah, you know, he was a guard his whole career until he grew and he became more of a forward. So he already had guard qualities coming in to us. So it was more trying to refine him and try to put him in positions to be successful, you know, as a 6'9", you know, forward that can handle the ball, can go outside. You know, I think one of Obi's biggest things that he does really well is a great passer, amazing passer, knows how to find people. So, you know, we were able to use all those gifts that he had and help him be the best version of himself. And while that was happening, he helped Dayton be the best version of us. So, you know, and, you know, being a big, getting them in the post, you know, teaching them how to make one or two moves. You don't need 15, just need one or two and be really good at that, you know, and, you know, rebounding, offensive rebounding, you know, running the floor. He's probably the best rim runner I've ever seen in my life. You know, he's just nonstop, you know, so just enhancing all the gifts that he already had and just helping him understand that this is what's going to get you to the next level.
What was the process like that freshman season of figuring out how to kind of build an offense around him? Because, I mean, it was kind of a historic year. I think he was the first freshman to make first team all Atlantic 10. He was insanely efficient that first year. And obviously by his second season, you guys really got it fully calibrated with that NBA style of offense, like the floor perfectly spaced around him. But How did you guys like kind of learn about him, and how did he sort of learn throughout that redshirt freshman season how to play and function in a college offense as a big when to your point, he was a guard for most of his life?
Yeah, so I think the other guy that did what Obi did was Lamar Odom at Rhode Island. That was a first team all freshman and first team all league. With Obi, you know, that redshirt freshman year, he was able to compete versus some really good players that we had already on our team that were older and were able to help him grow. You know, every day in practice, I kept saying, these are your games. You know, you ain't going to be able to play in the real game, but practice are your game. So you got to go out there and give them your all every day to be the best version of you. And then, you know, the interesting part was his redshirt freshman year, he wasn't starting. He didn't start for us in the beginning. You know, I think he started the first two games because our starting five man hurt his wrist. But then when he came back, Obi was coming off the bench. And then eventually we made the decision, like, we can't keep this kid coming off the bench. He has to start for us, man, because he was just so – he impacted the game so much. And then from there, it just took off, man. It was amazing to see just the progress from a kid that came in that wasn't able to, you know, physically handle what college basketball was to a year later, he started to dominate it. So it was amazing.
You know, I really wish that a certain other coach would come to the realization of this guy is too good to be sitting on the bench. He needs to start. But maybe we'll get to that in a minute.
BetOnline.net is your number one source for football betting info this season. You can find all the latest player developments, team matchups, news, podcasts, and in-depth articles and analysis on every game you can find. And as always, BetOnline remains your continued source for all your sports wagering info, with live betting and up-to-the-minute scores for every sport out there. The fastest and easiest way to check in on all your favorite games and events, including MLB, MMA, boxing, and golf. Alex, the odds I have my eye on tonight are the Atlantic Division odds. The Boston Celtics are the heavy favorites. Obviously, with the news that Ime Udoka is suspended for the season, Robert Williams is going to be out for 8 to 12 weeks. I still see them being a really high-level playoff threat. I could see them blowing the Atlantic. The Brooklyn Nets and all their star power are next at plus 215. I have no faith in that team as a regular season unit. We'll see if they can get it together for the playoffs. The Philadelphia 76ers are where I would lay my money, a plus 325. So that is a fantastic deal that you can find on BetOnline. Head to betonline.net or use your mobile device to learn more. BetOnline, it's where the game starts.
I'm kind of curious. This is more of a general question. This wasn't on our initial list of questions that we were thinking of asking, but I'm just kind of curious about this. How hard is it from the perspective of a college coach that you have to constantly be adjusting what your team potentially is? Like, it's so different in college than like the NBA. Like, we constantly harp on continuity, you know, like when we're talking about what we think could make the Knicks better or any given NBA team better, like, yeah, you got to have these guys play together for like 3-4 years. And then maybe you'll start to finally put something together good for the NBA. In college, you guys are like, you have to deal with turnover constantly. Like, what is it like going from having, I mean, I guess I could relate this back to Obi. Like, you have a guy like that who's so focal to your team, to then the next year have to come up with a whole new game plan, whole new offense that doesn't involve that player because they've moved on. Like, what's that process like for you on a year-to-year basis in the college game?
Well, you know, firstly, you know, I think our head coach, Coach Anthony Grant, does an amazing job of just keeping the main thing. You know, Obi was a great player for us, and eventually, you know, he's in the NBA now. But on that team, we have really good guys that helped Obi become the best version of himself, you know, with Jalen Crutcher, Ryan Mikesell, Trey Landers. So those guys were glue. You know, Obi was the All-American, but these guys were the glue. So it's just consistently trying to get guys to fit the way that we play. You know, we at the University of Dayton, we're able to get good players. You know, we're not going to be the guys to get top 10 players every year, but, you know, we get guys that fit our systems that are going to be here for a couple years and help, you know, the culture and help the way that we do things and to become the best version of themselves, but also us.
I want to fast forward to that breakout All-American sophomore season. To me, like someone who's like a little bit, just because of work, like a little bit more invested in the NBA and like follows college kind of casually, like the first time I heard of Obi Toppin, the first time I thought of Dayton as sort of a national team that year was that Kansas game in Maui, if I'm remembering correctly, went into overtime. Obi's having to duel with Udoka Azubuike, who obviously is a giant of a human being, even relative to someone like Obi Toppin. What do you remember from that game, and what do you remember taking away from both how good Obi could be that year and how good your team could be that year?
Yeah, we, it started in the preseason this summer. We felt that we had a really good team coming back, older guys, you know, mature guys, and they had a chip on their shoulder. We had lost to Colorado with the NIT that previous year. So now we have the whole team coming back. We had some guys that have redshirted the year prior that were online now that we felt that were very good players and going to help the team be better. So, you know, going into it, we felt really good about our program. You know, we felt like we're going to come up and sneak on some teams. And then when we got to Maui, we were excited. You know, we couldn't wait. I think we got Georgia in the first game, and, you know, we made a statement game and won. And I think VTech beat Michigan State, which was a surprise win. And we were like, okay. And then we went and beat VTech. So now you got powerhouse Kansas there, and it was amazing because the crowd was half Kansas, half Dayton. It was a small high school gym. It's just rocking, you know, and it was just an amazing atmosphere. You know, Jalen Crutcher hits the shot to take us into overtime, you know, and then in overtime, you know, it's hard to guard big fella. It was hard to guard him, you know, and Obi did his best, you know, and we did our best, but we knew after that game that we can compete with the best in the country.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. I'm curious, you know, we talked about Obi's character and everything a minute ago. I'm curious, do you have a favorite? He seems like, on top of being a nice guy, he seems like he jokes around. He seems like he's a pretty fun guy to be around off the court. Do you have a favorite off the court memory with Obi from when he was at Dayton?
Yeah, I remember Obi used to come to the house because him and my son are really close, and he would come to the house, have dinner, and just hang out. And then one day I'm upstairs, and I come downstairs before dinner, and they were doing a TikTok video or something, and it was like kitty cat meow meow. And all you see is Obi doing kitty cat meow meow with my young daughter who's around 9 and my son, and I'm just looking at this kid, and he's just like, you know, one of the nicest kids in the world, just having the best time of his life with a 9-year-old and an 11-year-old. So that showed me that this kid was just phenomenal, man. Just phenomenal.
What were your because obviously you lose that game to Kansas. I think you guys lost again to Colorado a couple games later. After that, you end the season. I mean, which unfortunately didn't really get to be finished in an appropriate way due to the pandemic, but you end the season on a 20-game win streak. What were your favorite memories from that stretch? Because I know, I mean, just studying NBA history and then even college basketball history, when a team goes on a stretch like that, there's like a certain point where you hit kind of a basketball nirvana and everyone is so interconnected. And I know my takeaway from that Dayton team was like, there were moments where I was like, oh, this kind of reminds me of those Spurs teams from 6 or 7 years ago, where it's such it's a perfect blend of a system and a skill set. And to your point on Obi, like the right star at the right time, like peaking at the right moment.
Yeah, these guys, they had swag, man. They felt that they were good enough to compete with the best in the country, and they showed it. You know, I was one day, we had a game, I don't remember the opponent, and I come into practice, and normally, you know, you have your scout ready, you're a little stressed regardless of who you're playing. And I'm sitting there, and I got my head down, just, you know, trying to lock in on what I have to present to the team. And Jalen Crutcher and Obi Toppin come up to me. He goes, "Coach, you're okay?" Because I'm, you know, and I'm like, yeah, I'm good. I'm just trying to lock in. He said, "Coach, don't worry about it. We got you, man. We got you." So I just looked at them, and it was just like they had that persona where, like, you know, we're going to go out there and we're going to do what we have to do. And it was just like reassuring to me as a coach, like, man, these dudes are really, really locked in.
Nice. Yeah, it sounds like it was a really fantastic season to go through. To get back to Obi specifically, and again, this is maybe giving some pointers to a certain individual that we maybe may or may not agree with how he uses Obi in the present day. So if he's listening, maybe he could hear this. how did you guys work on leveraging Obi's physical gifts as well as you did? Because he led the country in points per possession. It just felt like you really put him in the right position by running lots of pick and roll, allowing him to pass out of the pick and roll, like things of that nature. I mean, what did you guys do to really utilize him the best that year? And ultimately, as we all know, lead to him becoming the National Player of the Year.
Well, I think one of the biggest things is success leaves clues, right? And our head coach has coached some of the best college big men in the history of college sports, you know, with Joakim Noah, Al Horford. He had Larry Sanders at VCU. So he's seen this. This isn't his first rodeo. So he was able to put OB in positions to be able to be successful just because of what he's done before. He just had came back from the NBA to OKC. So, you know, he was able to open the floor up for Owen and let him use his physical gifts to impact the game. So it wasn't like something, okay, we just got Obi, we're going to do this. Now, coach had a plan way before that, and he just knew how to put Obi in the best positions possible to be successful.
How do you strike a balance with someone like Obi Toppin? I know this was a big point of conversation when the Knicks drafted him, who for you guys was a rim running center, but at least in, again, who Alex was referencing, the context of Tom Thibodeau's Knicks, it is not a center and definitively plays power forward in the NBA. Was it just sort of a balance of like, all right, like we're going to use you in this way on offense, like, but we're going to continue to round out your skill sets and like give you an opportunity to handle the ball and like throw passes out of the short roll? Like, how do you kind of strike that balance of like, this is how we're going to use you here, but this is how you're probably going to be used in the NBA?
Yeah. You know, with Obi, you know, we thought, you know, when he was going into the draft, we felt that, you know, one couple of his biggest was rim running, you know, putting pressure on defenses, you know, being able to handle the ball in the perimeter, you know, and, just overall, you know, energy and talent. You know, I think one of the biggest things with O also is when you get to the NBA, you got a lot of big dudes at the five spot. So it's hard for him also to be able to guard those big guys on a consistent basis, you know. But just looking at him this summer and how much bigger he's getting, you know, hopefully that's going to change. But for us, it was just putting him in just different situations, you know, with our pick and roll. And, you know, he learned at a very, very early stage in his career, if I start outrunning people, I'm going to get easy baskets, you know? So that was one of the biggest things was those first three steps. He had some of the best, never seen somebody get on in transition like he got, because he committed to it, you know? And then eventually the outside game started working for him. But Obi didn't take a lot of threes when he was in here at the University of Dayton, but he made them, but his percentages were good, but he wasn't taking a large amount of them.
Yeah, it's funny you say about his transition ability. I consistently say that he's like a wide receiver on a go route. The second that you know, the transition opportunity presents itself, it's one of my favorite parts of his game. You know, with the stuff that you were just saying there, I'm kind of intrigued. You mentioned him at the five, and that's something that, again, due to the rigidity or his lack of seeing Obi this way, Tibbs has not really played him at the five much in the NBA. And, you know, I will say, like, I think that we had some of the same concerns, you know, in terms of like, is he going to be big enough? And I remember the first time that he stepped on an NBA court for like his first preseason game, even I looked at him and I was like, he doesn't look quite as big here as he did in college compared to all these behemoths in the NBA, you know? Yeah. And, but that said, I do think that he's shown surprisingly like more defense than we thought. I mean, honestly, our biggest knock when he got drafted was we were like, we don't know how he's going to hold up defensively. You know, a lot of people that we respect in the scouting community, whatever, were like, he seems a little too rigid on defense. You know, don't know if he's necessarily going to be able to like keep guys in front of him on the perimeter, but then also maybe won't be big enough to really handle the big bruisers in the post in the NBA. So it became a little hard to figure out what his defensive role was going to be. But I think what you mentioned about his athleticism and how quick he can get out and transition and those quick steps have actually led to him being able to impact the game defensively that way as well, as far as being able to play passing lanes, just quick twitch things that allow him to generate, you know, turnovers and events and stuff like that, and really just like swarm people to the point that they make mistakes. I think that's been one of his big things in the NBA on defense. How have you seen him in the NBA so far as on the defensive end? Like, I think that's been, honestly, out of all the things that we knew about him coming in, I think how admirably. I won't say that he's been elite on defense or anything, but I think that he certainly held his own, which I think is more than we expected initially when he came into the league. What has been your take on his defensive presence in the NBA, and what do you think the future holds for him as far as that's concerned, as far as being able to either guard up or guard down in position, you know, as far as like playing in the post or more on the perimeter, or maybe even a little bit of both?
Yeah. So, firstly, I think Coach Thibodeau, you know, he's a well-respected coach and has been doing this for many years. And, you know, his defensive philosophies are totally different than what we did at Dayton. So, you know, for Obi, it's a learning curve, being able to go from one position here at the University of Dayton on the way that we wanted him to guard things, to do it the way that Coach Thibodeau wants to do it. So I think that it's taken time for him to be able to realize exactly what is needed from him. And when he goes out there, you know, his energetic, his quick twitch and the things that he does helps him stay on the floor for a certain amount of times. But, you know, I think now Coach Thibodeau is probably getting more and more comfortable and confident with having Obi out there. So I'm thinking that this year for O, just watching him and the way that he's doing things, he looks totally different than what he did in college, you know, because it's just different. It's just completely different. He has to go against freaking John Morant, Chris Paul. Those are different guards than, you know, guards that we have here at this level. But, you know, the more and more that he's out there, the more and more that he's able to play and work through those mistakes and continue to get better, I think the better he is going to become as a defender and just as an overall player.
You touched on this, but that ability to get out on transition, I think that's kind of one of the things that Tibbs has sort of had to wrap his head around, because he's obviously a coach that in general is always going to prioritize defense over offense. And I think there were points when he was a rookie where he was almost like a little like, He was so weird. Like the second that Obi would leak out a little too early, and even if it led to like 8 to 10 transition points a game and he gave up one offensive rebound, I don't know. I mean, this is speaking out of turn to some extent, but I don't know if he was always okay with that balance. What did you guys tell Obi about striking that balance, especially since he played center for you guys, in terms of like securing a defensive board versus being hyper aggressive, getting ahead of everyone down the court to catch that Hail Mary pass?
Yeah, we told him he needed to do both. We told him you need the rebound and then you need to outrun the guy that's guarding you.
Yeah,
he could do so. And he was doing it, but you know, he was out there for extended minutes. You know, he was playing 30 plus minutes, so he was able to pick and choose when he can do certain things. You know, I knew for a fact if somebody secured the rebound on the long rebound, and it wasn't him or another one of our bigs, Obi would be the first one down the floor, because he finally realized how to be able to play when he wasn't the rebound there. But, you know, also when he rebounded the ball, I said, oh, you can still run too, man. You don't need to slow down. So it was a healthy balance, but we made sure that he was doing both.
So this goes a little different. You know, we've been talking a lot of the basketball, which, of course, that's the best part to talk. But I had kind of a curiosity. What kind of legacy is Obi left at Dayton? You know, I know that, like, we've seen so many times, you know, sometimes one of these like larger than life talents comes through a mid-major, and it's like, I don't want to say it's enough to put you on the map, because obviously you're a Division I school, like Dayton had history before Obi Toppin, everything else. But to have a player, you know, at a mid-major win a National Player of the Year, I feel like that always kind of leaves a mark. Like we've seen it with, like, you know, Steph Curry at Davidson or John Moran at Murray State, you know, schools like that maybe people didn't think about in that way before, that then sort of get put on the map by having one of these big players. Obviously, we're talking to you like on Zoom right now, and I could see a big picture of Obi Toppin right behind you in the office. Like, yeah. It's obvious he's left a mark here. Like, do you think there's been any like long-term impacts of Obi since he left, or like, does it help with recruiting or anything? And I guess just in general, like, what sort of is the legacy that he left on the program and is admittedly somewhat short time there?
Yeah. So, you know, it's great that you asked that question. Obi was here for probably 2 to 3 weeks this summer, working out. He had a couple of camps he had to do here. And, you know, I don't know if you saw, but the TBT was here. And, you know, Obi was here with the guys that probably played with one or two of those guys while he was here at Dayton, but he's right behind the bench. He's coaching them. And next thing you know, you have an arena full of Dayton fans coming down to get autographs. And you see a kid that, you know, is from New York, but basically feels like Dayton is his home also. And you have to grab Obi before he will turn a signing something. He'll sign the whole stadium if he could, because that's just the person that he is. And the people from Dayton love him, you know. And no, he did an amazing job on the basketball court, but it's the person that he is off the court that they love even more. And, you know, it's just, you know, that energetic smile of his that, you know, when you're around him, you just feel great. So, you know, it's helped the community, but it's also helped the program. You know, we got a guy this year that's Deron Holmes that we feel that's a real good player, has a chance to be a NBA player also. But that was his favorite player in high school, watching Dayton. So, you know, seeing Obi's success led us to get another player that can be just as good as Obi because of what Obi did. So continuously moving down the line, you're going to be able to get guys because of how we were able to help Obi, but also the way Obi was able to help our program.
What do you remember from the very end of that sophomore season? Obviously it wasn't like in the greater context of what was going on in the world. Like, it's still sports. Like, it wasn't tragic in that sense, but it was tragic in its own way. It was to our previous point, you guys had won 20 games in a row. I think you finished in the final AP poll, ranked third in the country, like probably looking to get another shot at Kansas, playing again, just by definition, better than anyone in America. And then COVID comes and ends that season preemptively. And you talk about a guy like Obi Toppin, like even at like some better schools, that's a once in a, or not better, but bigger schools, that's a once in a generation type of player. And you don't get that chance to see what you guys could do in March on that great stage. Like, how did you guys handle that in the moment? And how do you look back on that, like a few years after?
In the moment, it was one of the hardest things to see those kids' faces and just to see what they've worked for that whole year, what they've done and how close they were. And, you know, just to watch and just to feel the disappointment that we weren't able to continue and, you know, do something even bigger than was already done. But one of the biggest things, and I remember saying it to them, you know, with Coach Grant, was like, they can't take away what was done already. You know, you guys won 20 games. You guys were number three in the country. You guys went undefeated in the A-10, you know, and they can never take that away from them boys because it was done, you know. So we look at that, you know, saying we did it, but, you know, it was really hard when it happened. You know, and now, you know, these guys still come back and talk about it. And, you know, the teams that are coming after that, you know, always have to understand that season was special. But, you know, we want to recreate it again. We want to do it again. So we have to be able to continue to fight, because that's always going to be in the back of our mind saying, man, what could have. But now we have to move forward and see what we can do now with the group that we have here.
So this is a again, sort of a more general question, but one that very much relates to Obi. There's definitely a perception in the draft community that draft age is an indicator of how much room a guy has to improve. And I think that with Obi, he's been sort of a case breaker in the sense that, you know, that has proved to be summarily false with him. Like, he came into the league at 23 years old, but has improved, I think, greatly in each of his first two seasons, and looks like he's primed to potentially improve greatly again going into his third season. What would you say to that general premise as far as evaluation from an NBA perspective? Like, how much you think age should impact where a guy gets drafted potentially, or what their like floor or ceiling is viewed to be?
Yeah, you know, it's a give and take. You know, this year they drafted Chris Duarte that was 24 years old, you know, and I still think Chris has a lot of improvement to do in his game also. You know, I think from last year to this year, the Pacers are really excited, and he was old too, you know. And I think with Obi, you know, he was one of those kids that was a late bloomer, you know, as far as, you know, being 3 to 4 inches taller after graduating from high school and being able to learn how to play the big man position instead of being a guard. So it took him a little more time to adjust to that. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, it's great to have these young guys and say that they got room to grow and be the best version of themselves in 3 to 4 to 5 years from that. But sometimes them guys that are already made, and they get better also. You know, we have guys here that, you know, come in around 19, and we have guys that come at 17, but some of the guys that are 19 2 years from now are still getting better. So it's like your development and how you're able to help them be the best versions of them.
Watching Obi in the NBA now, and I'm sure you can never take, I'm sure you're a fan, but you can never take your coaching hat off with a guy that you were so integral in developing and building into who he is today. What are you looking for him to improve on coming into his third season in the league?
Yeah, for me, I always tell him, man, do all the things that got you there, but then also continue to be the person that you are. If the coach is asking you, you need to run and rebound 15 times, go get 20. If the coach is telling you, this is how you have to guard a pick and roll, do it better than what they asked you to, because that's what's going to keep you on the court, man. At the end of the day, the things that you are gifted at, you're always going to be able to do that because that's who you are. But, the other little things that are going to help you to stay on the floor, those are going to be, that's what's going to help you stay on the court because that's what's acquired from you,
So I think that leads directly into what I think is our final question for you here. I'll phrase it this way. If you were going to give the Knicks some advice on how to best use him going forward, how best to utilize the best version of Obi Toppin, what do you think you would tell them, especially as it relates to how he's been used thus far in the NBA?
Well, I think that the way that he was playing towards the end of the year last year showed you glimpses of what he can do, and I think that the Knicks have, abundance of guys that can score the ball. You have Randall that I think it's a really good player and that can help the team scoring the ball. He's a go-to guy, And I think that Obi can either play with him or play, alongside with him, or when he subs, put Obi in the game. But, I think one of the biggest things that I see is just let the kid go, let him run, let him do what he does best. And I think that that'll help Obi, but I'll also help the Knicks.
All right, Coach, I can't thank you enough for all the time. I mean, I can say, I remember looking back on draft night, Alex and I were initially, honestly, kind of disappointed when the Knicks got Obi Toppin. We were worried about his defense, and we're like, all right, does it make sense with Julius Randle? And I'm sure, similar to you guys watching him over the years, he's won me over maybe more than any player I've ever had on the Knicks. Like, going from someone who I was what's he gonna be, to like, wow, this guy is just like the most likable human being you've ever seen, and a heck of a basketball player as well. So I thank you for giving us some more insight on to who he is as a person and a player, and I'm excited to see him. I'm excited to see Dayton this year. So thank you so much for the time, Coach.
Oh, thank you guys very much. I really appreciate you guys having me on. This was great. I'm a huge New York Knicks fan, born and raised in New York. So I'll be cheering them on this year, just like every other year. And one more thing, let's go Flyers.
There we go. Coach, you ever have more thoughts on the team in general? Always have a spot in the pod, but that's it for this one, guys. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll be back.
Thank you guys.
Talk to you soon on Locked On Knicks.
Take care. Bye.